Welcome, Allie.
Thank you, Peter. Good to be here. I'm very much looking forward to giving this talk on renunciation. It is the third in the series of talks I've been giving on the paramis, the first two being generosity and ethical conduct, and we have now made our way to renunciation, which in Pali translates to Nekkhamma Parami. So, when doing my reading and research into renunciation in order to create this talk, I was really impressed by how dramatic renunciation, like the word gives off. I don't know if maybe others can relate. It can give this impression of like dramatic forsaking. Like I'm renouncing my earthly identities and possessions, and I will now spend the rest of my days living in a monastery. Or at least that was the impression that I felt. And while that dramatic, say, representation is technically valid as a valid form of renunciation, there's often this misconception that renunciation is analogous with deprivation or ascetic denial. But renunciation, plainly speaking, is really the practice of letting go or of refraining from cravings, big or small. The Pali word for craving is tanha, and there are three forms of tanha. There is kama tanha, which is the craving for sensual pleasures. This is the type of craving that we often think of when we think of craving. So, like wanting possessions, wanting to indulge in food or sensory activities, stimulation that makes us feel good, experiences. So, that's craving of sensual pleasures of the physical world. There's also then bhava tanha, which is the craving for becoming or existence. And this one is a little bit more subtle. This form of craving is understood as the desire to have a fixed identity, to become the person we think we should be. It manifests as the ambition to seek success, fame, or a particular status, whatever we think we should be. Famous, successful, strong, generous, loving, or the wisest and most compassionate person in the room. This is the craving of becoming.
Is this being recorded?
And then the third is vibhaha tanha, which is the craving for non-existence or non-becoming. This is the desire for annihilation, for the self to not exist, which arises from a feeling of despair or a wish to escape reality. It is the opposite side of the coin of the previous craving that I mentioned, that of bhava tanha. If bhava tanha says, I want to be like this or I should be like this, vibhava tanha says, I don't want to be like this. I shouldn't be like this. So the concept of craving in Buddhism is a pretty important topic. The Second Noble Truth states that the cause of suffering is craving. So to understand how craving shows up as desiring sensory pleasures and as being or not being a certain way, that's our foundation for understanding renunciation. With the craving for sensual pleasures, this one is most obvious. It is what drives us to chase comfort, beauty, stimulation, and pleasure through the senses. It's the mind saying again and again, if I just have this one thing, then I'll finally be at ease. There's nothing inherently wrong with pleasure. It's important to mention. The Buddha never said we shouldn't experience pleasant things. The problem is the clinging that shows up when we pursue these sensory pleasures. We confuse pleasure or pleasant states with happiness. And so when a craving arises for a particular possession or experience, we give in to it and we find ourselves feeling good temporarily until inevitably another craving pops up. So kamatanha, the craving of sensual pleasures, keeps us running on this treadmill of grasping and losing, trying to secure some sense of a lasting satisfaction in what is by nature fleeting. Then there's bhavatanha, the craving for becoming, the desire to be someone. This one is a bit subtler, as I mentioned. It is the voice that says, I'll finally be happy when I reach this level, achieve that, or become this kind of person. We spend a lot of time in life constructing an identity that feels solid. I am a good friend, a wise teacher, a successful practitioner, a daughter, a husband, a wife. These roles give us temporary ground, but they also trap us. Because underneath the drive to become is a whisper that says, I'm not enough as I am. Bhavatanha runs deep in spiritual practice as well. If we imagine that we need to be an all-loving, unconditionally compassionate, patient, and wise human being, then we are likewise falling into the same trap. Spiritual identities are still identities, and identities are just ideas. Ideas that we become attached to and strive to achieve or embody in order to alleviate the underlying sense that one is not enough. And then with vibhavatanha, the craving for non-becoming, as I mentioned before, if bhavatanha, the previous one, says, I want to be this, then vibhava, I can't ever pronounce it, vibhavatanha, says, I don't want to be this. So this is the craving for escape, the longing to disappear, to not feel, to not exist in the mess of being human. It can show up as despair, numbness, or even spiritual bypass, trying to transcend life rather than open up to it. We might experience this form of craving when our self-concept fails to meet our expectations. The narrative might be that one is a failure, worthless, or not good enough. And the pain engendered by those narratives leads to the craving for escape. At the root of all three forms of craving, sensual, becoming, and non-becoming, lies a scarcity mentality, a felt sense that something is missing or lacking. With sensual craving, we might feel as though we're lacking in some way in a given moment. Maybe we aren't feeling pleasant when we think we should, or maybe we're feeling a lack of control in a given moment where we feel like we should feel a sense of control. So we might indulge in food or buying new things or pursuing exciting experiences, new achievements. With the craving of becoming, at the heart of this striving to become a certain kind of person is the sense of not being enough as one is. We form these ideal versions of ourselves or ideas of ourselves, and we find ourselves striving to be or embody that idea, thinking, if I could just be like this, then I would be happy. Then I wouldn't feel or be inadequate anymore. And with the craving of non-becoming, it is the extreme sense of lack that one feels that propels the craving to disappear. In other words, I lack so much goodness that I yearn to be anything but me. To indulge in this craving means to escape, literally or figuratively, by escaping from a place or situation, or to escape by dissociating or numbing oneself. When we believe we're lacking, the mind naturally reaches outward to fill the gap through pleasure, identity, or escape. But the seed of the scarcity mentality, the seed which sprouts this felt sense of scarcity and craving, is ignorance. Ignorance hides the truth that what we're searching for was never missing to begin with. It's like a wave trying to find the ocean, not realizing that it is the ocean. I want to pause here just for a moment, and I want to just check in because I know that there was a lot of information regarding the different forms of craving, and I want to just check in if there are any reactions so far, any questions.
I thought it was interesting that.
Can you hear Alex?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I thought it was particularly interesting that, I mean, I don't have a question, and just a remark that the desire for annihilation, I forget the term for it, but that was just interesting that there's like a label for that because so often that goes overlooked versus like all the other forms of craving, like, you know, we've heard those, but that was really interesting. Even though there's like a label for it.
Yeah, vibhava, the desire for non-existence.
Yeah. Very, very interesting. Definitely have experienced that, so it's really interesting to hear it labeled.
That one is really interesting, and it does stand out because typically we think of craving as this pull or this draw towards something, and when we are in, say, a state of despair and we're wishing to escape, typically, we might not associate that with being in a state of craving. But when we look closely, we can see that that desire to escape is a desire. And it is rooted in this very felt sense of lack that really is visceral or perhaps all-consuming. Whereas, say, the sense of lack that might ordinarily come up might be, I'm not feeling really good in this moment. So, and I feel like I should, so I'm going to go grab a cookie and that'll make me feel better. With this form of craving, vibhava tanha, the lack is really pervasive. Like I am lacking entirely in any goodness and I don't deserve to be me. I don't deserve to be here. And so I'm going to find some way to escape this feeling. If that makes sense.
Another question?
Yeah.
Or comment?
Yeah. I'm thinking that even more fundamental, the sense of lack, and I'm not speaking from experience here, even more fundamental that is taking it all personally. The existence of I, who is taking it all personally.
Did you hear that, Ali?
I was having a hard time hearing. Could you repeat that, please?
I said, you talked about sense of lack, all these problems arising from sense of lack.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to make a comment that maybe more, even more fundamental than sense of lack is taking it all personally, because mm-hmm. somebody is feeling that sense of lack, and maybe that somebody is a mirage.
Mm.
That's it.
So taking things personally, did I hear that correctly?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and even that person, whoever is taking it personally, that person doesn't exist.
That's a good point. It's very true. So yes, that is.
I'm not saying that from experience. I wish I was, but yeah.
See, that's a desire for existence right
Yeah,
there.
right.
We're catching these cravings pop up in real time. This is an experiential and as well as theoretical Dharma talk. That's good.
Yeah, I want to add something into that too, that the desire for existence, we tend to think that that's a positive ideal self. You know, I want to be admired. The flip side also applies. There's, because of prior conditioning, there's a desire to be a loser or desire to be a victim. That also is part of bhava, becoming. That's literally the word bhava means becoming. And I think that's important to understand. And then that's closely tied into vibhava,
Yes.
which, is even though we may identify with the karmic load that says, I'm a loser. We desperately want to get rid of that,
I appreciate the chuckle because I think it does kind of point to the messiness and the silliness of these experiences of having, say, this say habit pattern of thinking or believing that one is a loser or a failure in some way. And then in tandem, this desire or craving for that to not be there, to not feel that way. And so it's complex and it's messy. And as I progress in the talk, I'll get to the importance of seeing clearly and discernment in order to suss out these habitual patterns that come up, both of craving of, or aversion or the different forms of craving and how they show up. So these are all really good points. I appreciate everyone's comments. Is there anything else before I move on?
Not in this room.
Okay, perfect. So we have gone over so far the three forms of craving and their root, which is the scarcity mentality. That scarcity mentality really being born from ignorance. And so if we think about the Four Noble Truths, I said previously that the second noble truth states that the cause of suffering is that of craving. If we examine, though, the 12 links of dependent origination, which we're not going to examine right now, but the first link in the 12 links of dependent origination is ignorance. And these 12 links are what perpetuate the cycle of samsara. And so, in a way, at the root of craving is ignorance. So it would behoove us to not only examine craving, its nature, and its antidote, which is renunciation, but also then to inspect even more closely the root of that, the seed, which is that of ignorance. So with that seed of ignorance is born that sense of scarcity. And scarcity keeps us grasping at these symbols of enoughness, whether that be possessions, approval, or even spiritual achievements. Renunciation begins when we start to see through that illusion that nothing external and no fixed identity can complete what was never incomplete to begin with. This is the heart of the matter. The illusion that at any given moment something is missing, either outside of ourselves or within ourselves, the illusion, first and foremost, that there is a self needing completion to begin with. So that brings us to this question of how do we practice renunciation? And there are a handful of tools that we can utilize, that being mindfulness, wisdom, compassion, and patience. Waves of craving will inevitably come up unless you are, a very advanced and say advanced a spiritual practitioner, and you're like a, you've lived in a monastery and you've practiced for years, which I mean, even if you've lived in a monastery and practiced for years, it does not mean that you've necessarily come to a state where you're free of craving. But that being said, for us common folk, craving is going to come up, and our task is to simply observe the energy of craving. In this moment of mindful observing, we pause. And in this pause, prior to indulging whatever the craving is leading us to, we lean into wisdom. We remember how the pursuit of pleasure or craving only leads to more suffering when coming from a place of lack. So we notice, right, the energy of craving comes up in the body. The craving has a story attached to it. I want this or I need this in order to fulfill this sense of inadequacy that I'm feeling in this moment. And we remember that when we indulge in it, we perpetuate the cycle of needing more and more, and it doesn't lead to the lasting fulfillment that this craving is leading us to believe it will lead us to. And so then a question can arise in that pause. Is this desire that I'm having rooted in a sense of lack? If yes, then the wise choice would be to refrain. I mentioned earlier in the talk that the Buddha never said we shouldn't experience pleasant things. And that is an important thing to remember when it comes to this mindful pause and introspective inquiry. If I experience, for example, this desire come up to become a monk and move to a monastery, is it coming from a place of believing I'm not spiritual enough as I am right now? Is it coming from a desire to escape? There could very well be a desire that arises to become a monk and move to a monastery that comes from a place of wholeness that is free from lack. That desire, then, we could say, is a wholesome desire. We see this as well with relationships where people may desire entering into a relationship from a place of lack, of feeling incomplete. But to desire a relationship from a place of wholeness is a different experience, one that fosters ultimately a more wholesome outcome. So when we experience the urgency and energy of craving, it is most likely rooted in lack, and therefore would call for renunciation. And desire, while often used interchangeably with craving, does carry this nuanced distinction. While craving is always rooted in lack, desire is not always rooted in lack. So practicing wise discernment, noticing, pausing, and inquiring as to whether a desire is coming from a place of incompleteness or wholeness is where we start. Upon recognizing that a wave of craving is rooted in lack and acknowledging the suffering that it will inevitably lead to, we practice refraining, which is this conscious choice to not engage or pursue said craving. In the state of choosing to refrain, we continue our mindfulness practice. We notice the energy of craving. the sensations, the restlessness, where it's located in the body, how it shifts and changes from moment to moment. We notice that it's just restless energy. And like all states, pleasant or unpleasant, the wave subsides. And so then we pull from another component of wisdom, which is that of impermanence, this understanding and recognition that all states, including the restless energy of craving, will pass as it always does. This is easier said than done for many cravings. It's often very challenging, depending especially on how pronounced the feeling of craving is. It can take sometimes enormous strength and courage to refrain, but the more we refrain, the easier it becomes over time. And because of how challenging refraining can be, incorporating compassion and patience can be very supportive assets. To notice the wave of craving, to look deeply into it and see how it is rooted in the sense of incompleteness, to recognize the suffering that is born from it, opens one up to extend compassion in those moments of refrain. Sometimes in my practice, when I'm attempting this, I will practice that mindfulness of the body and notice the energy. And I might put a hand over my heart and say out loud or whisper to myself, like, this is hard. It's really hard to not give in to what this energy is really pulling me to. But I know that if I can just stick with it, the wave will pass. And it'll ultimately lead to a place of greater contentment and equanimity. But this moment of really acknowledging how hard it can be and how it is often tied to suffering is what creates this ground for compassion to arise and ease one through that wave. And because these waves come again and again, patience is very important. Ajahn Chah once said that being a monk is knowing about letting go, but being unable to do it 99% of the time. That humility is the spirit of renunciation, to keep showing up, seeing clearly, and gently loosening our grip again and again. And also importantly, when we begin refraining from craving, we often find ourselves in the state of groundlessness and incompleteness that we have been trying so hard not to feel, where the pursuit of each craving again and again, while keeping us stuck in a cycle of suffering, still gave some sense of control or ground, no matter how fleeting. Each time we fulfilled the craving, to renounce the impulse of a craving means to stand still in the groundlessness of being, where we confront really the tenderness of being human, this felt sense of inadequacy, the uncertainty of life and the fear and it engenders. The longing to feel happy and to be free from suffering. These are all of the things that we might encounter when we renounce craving and rest in that groundlessness. And it is in this tender, groundless place that we paradoxically find our ground and realize our sense of wholeness. At the core, renunciation is a process. More often than not, it is not a one and done deal. We notice the wave. We look deeply into it. We renounce and we do it again and again until the wave ceases to show up at all. to be compassionate and patient with oneself throughout the process is the balm that aids one's courage to continue refraining again and again, along with the faith rooted in wisdom that when we plant the seed of renunciation and water it continuously, a flower will bloom. A flower of freedom from the cycles of craving and a quiet, intimate remembering of our original wholeness, absent of any self. That concludes my talk. There is, I'm sure, so much more that can be said about renunciation and craving, and I really wanted to distill it in a way that is straightforward and to the point when it comes to what craving looks like, how it shows up, and what it really means to practice renunciation with these tools of wisdom, patience, compassion, discernment. And so for the remainder of our time, I want to invite comments, discussion, questions, reactions. This is a topic that I know we all have experienced, and so it is often very personal, but I'm curious about any comments or questions.
And Brendan?
Me and Peter were talking about this earlier. I'm going to tie it to practice, because when we talk about these things now, they relate directly to the, I don't know the right word, they're not mental tricks, but they relate directly to the mind states that get you into absorption. I mean, every single samadhi, every single thing that we're pointing at to release, to constantly release, to renounce, that knowledge comes directly from, to me it seems like it comes directly from experience on the cushion.
That is a good point. That the and to make sure I'm understanding you clearly, you're saying that to really renounce and practice renouncing, it comes from these experiential insights obtained from formal meditation on the cushion. Am I understanding you right?
I mean, even if you desire to go deeper into meditation, it ruins it. I mean, even if you try, it ruins it. That's kind of the point there. Just you're constantly having to release the idea.
That's what renunciation is, releasing the idea.
Yeah, releasing the idea.
So, yeah, no, that's an insightful observation, how the moment that you might notice, let's say that you're in a state of absorption, there is often, right, a part of you or a voice that's like, oh, wow, this is awesome. I love this. And then in the moment of, say, that voice or that craving showing up, even if it's subtle, it takes one further away from that state. And so it ends up being a very like subtle balancing act the further along you go of continuously being mindful of that craving that arises. And that takes practice. And that's why patience is really important. But that is a really good point.
That's another of the paramis, patience.
Yes. Yes. I'm impatient to get to that parami. I do struggle with impatience, so I'm sure that one will be.
I'm not sure
helpful.
Everyone in the room understands what parami is translated as. Can you fill that in, please?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I probably should have included that. I did include the description of parami in the last two talks, but parami translates to perfection in Pali, and it is these 10 virtues that essentially guide one towards the shore of enlightenment. So we talked about, or I gave a talk on generosity. That was the first parami. And then there was ethical conduct. And now we are talking about renunciation. So all of these paramis are practices or virtues that the Buddha outlined that will further one along in the path towards enlightenment or awakening. And it really is illuminating, I think, to learn about and really begin, or not begin, but to emphasize practicing these paramis, and that you begin to really see that when practicing these paramis, they do lead to these more wholesome outcomes. To be or to practice generosity leaves one feeling a sense of joy or often gratitude. The same with ethical conduct, to practice that virtue of living within certain ethical guidelines leaves one free from, say, guilt or shame that might come from engaging in things that violate one's moral code. So I'm certainly looking forward to continuing the series of talks. We have 7 more, so we will certainly, it'll take some time to get there.
Yes, sir.
So I see all these things, Parami, as de-emphasizing self. And when you talk about mindfulness, yes, we are mindful of whatever feeling we're going through and really get into it without expectation of any results. Because it is the consciousness that dissolves it. Do you see what I'm saying, or do you have any questions?
What you're saying is that at the core of renunciation is this illusion of self, and when practicing renunciation, it's important to focus on the effort and not the outcome.
Mindfulness is another one of the paramis.
Another one?
Mindfulness is another one of the paramis.
Yeah. So what's my study, it's, you really get into the feeling and you don't think too much about it, you know, where it's coming from or whatever. You just get into it, and you become very conscious to a deep level, and apparently the consciousness dissolves it. Again, I'm not speaking from experience, but that's what I know.
I think that's relevant here, and I see what you're saying about how it is really the effort that one can really extend, this effort of mindfulness, but the rest just happens on its own. It's, I think, kind of touching on dependent origination. When these conditions are all present and you've been, say, practicing renunciation and mindfulness of say craving, when it shows up again and again, it creates or furthers the conditions for eventually that craving to cease. And that happens on its own. It's not something that one can will or force, in the same way that when you plant a flower, all you can do is supply the conditions, but the flower grows on its own. It happens on its own, in the same way with the cessation of craving. I think maybe that's what you're saying. Is that, yeah?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, good.
Good question.
Yes, you and then, yes.
Let me talk for a minute.
It's Mike, right?
Yeah, Mike here.
Thanks for the talk. This annihilation thing. So I'm understanding it as both a drive and a craving. So I'm trying to think, like, what is the antidote to this? Kind of like, what use? What's the silver lining to it? Or what fruits can be had by looking at it, right? Because does it come from a place of lack? Seems to be like a theme of like maybe a useful question to bring to it. And then like what is an antidote to it? Is that, I'm trying to think of it from that perspective, because does renunciation play into that, or is it back to the theme of it arises and passes? Do you kind of hear what I'm saying?
I think so. So what I'm hearing is when it comes to the third form of craving, the bhava, tanha, the craving for non-becoming, what would be the antidote to that form of craving that seems quite distinct from the other forms of craving? Did I understand that right?
Right, essentially.
Okay. So the antidote is the same, although it may be practiced or it may show up a little bit differently. If we understand, right, that at the core of any type of craving is that sense of insufficiency or incompleteness or lack, then with this form of craving, the craving of non-becoming, it is rooted in a very pervasive sense of lack, right? The idea or the notion of I'm a failure, I'm a loser, I am worthless, I'm a terrible person, I don't deserve to be here. And from that sense of lack comes this deep longing or craving to not be this type of way, this notion or conception of who I am. And so part of that process or this antidote of renunciation would be to acknowledge that craving or that longing to disappear or to escape. So I gave an example of the desire, let's say, to become a monk and move to a monastery. But if I inspect it, right, that craving a little bit more deeply and see that it's coming from that third form of craving that I'm wanting to escape because my life is hard and I hate being an adult and responsibilities are challenging and the world is falling apart. And I think that if I escape this and move to a monastery and I fulfill that craving, then I will escape the state and that sense of deep lack within myself or lack that I'm perceiving in the world. And so to acknowledge that craving and renounce it would then be the opposite, to not escape. And then to look more clearly and deeply into the source or the root of that craving and see that it is rooted in ignorance, in this felt sense or belief that I am so lacking in myself that I need to get out of here. I need to escape or disappear from myself physically or literally or figuratively. So we can see renunciation as really just giving, as doing the opposite of whatever the pull or the craving is telling you to do, whether it's telling you to move towards something or to move towards something because you want to get away from something, if that makes sense.
That work, Mike?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. You're saying that, and I was thinking about discernment, because that seemed to be a core of one of the themes of your talk too. So is the discernment, as I understand it, I'm hearing it, the antidote is identify that it's craving.
Right.
In
So,
place of lack and intentionally, and intentionally, that's where the renunciation intentionally comes into easier said than done, but abandon it once it's within context of identifying the lack. Like, well, because once you identify the lack, you identify it's within a broader context, right? To identify a lack, you need to.
lack of what?
Can I just chime in? I don't want to
Yeah,
ask another
a lack of
question.
what?
Just let's finish this up first, then we get to Allie and then get to your Brandon. So did you
With
get that, Allie?
that it the discernment and how it does illuminate a broader context of lack. Did I hear that?
So like identifying lack helpful. Discernment to identify that drive for whatever craving comes from a place of lack.
Right, exactly.
And then what?
And then two things. To do the opposite, to renounce. So I notice the craving of I'm gonna renounce everything in my life and become a monk and move to a monastery. And so I pause and I notice, where is this coming from? Okay, I'm really wanting to become a monk and move to a monastery because I feel like a failure in my life and I can't bear just being here in the sense of self as I am right now in my current environment or the state of the world. And so I really just want to escape that. And so upon acknowledging that, so that's the discernment, I might then choose to renounce that pull or that craving to abandon my life and move to a monastery and choose to stay.
Then you have to abandon the notion that you're unworthy or.
Exactly. And that's the second is then, upon, say, choosing the opposite to stay, I then look more deeply and clearly into this illusion of holding that craving to begin with, which is that I'm a failure or I'm a loser. And I acknowledge that that is just a story. And a story is not representative of my whole nature, my true nature. And that sense of lack within myself is also just a story. When there was nothing lacking or incomplete to begin with. So it is a renouncing of the pull to escape and a renouncing of the story that I am lacking so deeply to begin with.
Let me add something to that, Allie, that
Sure.
there's the lack basically is the lack of certainty. That's the viparinama dukkha, that we want some certainty about our wonderfulness or our awfulness. And underneath that is this undercurrent of uncertainty about life, about my place in life, about my ability to function, my survival, so forth and so on. And that's what this is addressing. But there comes a point with practice. Renunciation is just leading up to a particular kind of experience that's ultimately liberating. It's called relinquishment. And relinquishment is basically a direct realization of the futility of craving and clinging. Futility of believing that something must be happening in order for this self to be real. There's just suchness. And that's what relinquishment is about. It's not renunciation, because there has to be something to renounce. Relinquishment is just a realization that there's no self that needs something. We're getting have to do some time management here. I'm curious to hear what Ali has to. You have a question or a comment, sir, and then we'll go to Brandon.
Sure. Yeah, I'll keep it quick. I just wanted to thank you for your talk first, and I quickly wanted to share like one thing I do with, I guess it's renunciation, is whenever I do sort of quiet down and catch myself like thinking negatively or thinking negatively about someone else or something like that, is I'll just like say a chant in my head and I'll just like say peace, love, joy. And then I just sort of like cut off like the negative thought process. But then what I actually wanted to share, going back to what we were talking about sort of focusing on the outcomes. Like I think something I've been being very mindful about lately is just focusing on like, or not focusing on the fruits of my labor, but more so just the labor and the work, you know? And it's like in a way that's sort of greater than what a lot of us can understand, you know? It's really important to just focus on the work and not the outcome.
Process rather than product.
Yeah, absolutely that. Like instead of focusing on like, you know, like if you're exercising, not focusing on like losing the weight or gaining muscle, or like if you're working, not focusing on the promotion, but just focusing on doing what you need to do in that moment. And it just really works really well. And I think a direct way I could notice this, for example, is like when I first started meditating, I would like, during the time I was meditating, I would focus, or like I would start thinking about like the health benefits of meditation, or like how it's going to change me in a positive way. And it would directly take away from like my practice of meditation, you know? So just wanted to share that.
That's a really good point. And it, this notion of one only really being responsible for the effort and not the outcome is true. And it's certainly one that we may need to always or continuously bring ourselves back to, because of that propensity, right, to try to cling to certain outcomes. And that second point that you made as well is also really insightful, those thoughts about like the health benefits and how that like ends up taking you away. It is really interesting how that works. Or sometimes, you know, kind of touching on another comment that was made earlier about the positive, pleasant states that you might experience in absorption, right? Like a thought pops up of like, wow, I haven't had any thoughts in so long. I'm doing this so well. And like those being thoughts, right? Or like, I'm such a good meditator. Look at me. I'm sitting here. It's been 45 minutes. And, or like the other day, you know, there was a moment where I expressed, I don't know, some humility, and I thought to myself, like, wow, that was so humble of me, like, right? But then, but that, you know, being rooted in pride or conceit, and so these thoughts.
Good amount for somebody to congratulate you on being so humble.
Right, yeah. So it is. These are our pitfalls that show up, and that's why I think discernment is really important, to be able to notice when those thoughts may distract us or come in these disguises that take us away from the path.
So, Brandon? Hmm? Okay. Your name again?
Chayla.
Chayla?
Yes. I guess what I'm thinking, and I don't know, I'm struggling a little bit with this, is like a lot of the examples and a lot of the connotations goes to more like negative experience, like letting go of negative thoughts, letting go of like most of the cravings are related to negative things. But let's say that I want to become a more compassionate person. Like I consider myself, I'm not compassionate, and I want to be a compassionate person. How do I see that without coming from a place of lack and like craving into becoming a compassionate person? How do I apply this to a more like positive experiences, I guess?
An excellent question, and that is right, one of those more subtle ways that that craving can show up, because why wouldn't it be reasonable to want to be a more compassionate, generous, or patient person? But implied in that is this sense that you are a person or a self that is not compassionate enough. You are not generous enough, and therefore you need to strive to become this vision of being a more compassionate, loving, and generous person. Whereas perhaps the more wholesome approach is an aspiration or intention to practice compassion when moments arise that might call for it, as opposed to trying to become this embodied idea of being a compassionate or generous person. Does that make sense?
She's nodding her head, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, so this is a very good conversation, and I really appreciate the wisdom that you shared with us tonight, Allie. It's helped me a lot. It's our custom at the end of our meetings for us to sit together in silence briefly, so let's do that. Thank you for your practice. I wish you well. I hope we're all reasonably safe and happy until the next time we have a chance to chat.